stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is praising the United States and China's ratification of the Paris Agreement, a key step by the world's two biggest polluters that aims to bring the climate change accord into force this year. Speaking at the G20 summit in the historic city of Hangzhou, Ban also urged other countries to act.
We just need another 29 countries representing 16% of global emissions to bring this Paris Agreement into force. I urge all leaders, particularly G20 countries, to accelerate their domestic ratification processes so we can turn the aspirations of Paris into the transformative climate action the world so urgently needs.
Meantime, President Barack Obama plans to open discussions on the disputed South China Sea while at the G20 meetings. He plans to tell Beijing that there will be consequences for their territorial moves in the contested areas of the South China Sea. He made those comments to CNN in an exclusive interview set to air on Sunday. Obama said China needs to be responsible, that he plans to tell President Xi Jinping that he should look to the U.S. as an example of a country that maintains its power in part by restraining itself. Zimbabwe's 92-year-old leader is back home in Harare Saturday amid rumors his health is failing. Reports say Robert Mugabe, Africa's oldest leader, went to Dubai to seek medical attention. Zimbabweans are growing increasingly frustrated with Mugabe and his failure to fix the country's economy. This is VOA News. A 5.6 magnitude earthquake hit the midwestern state of Oklahoma Saturday morning, and its impact was felt more than 700 kilometers away, including in Wichita, Kansas, where Sharon Richenberger says she was awakened by the rumbling of the earth.
We did get earthquake insurance after there was a 4.8 quake here. And that's when we actually got a crack in our ceiling. If you have anything over a 5.0, they put a moratorium within a 200-mile radius of you to where you can no longer get earthquake insurance.
Ms. Richenberger talking about the situation in Wichita, Kansas, earlier today. So far, no reports of any injuries, but local reports say people in Oklahoma City, the state's capital, have reported damage there. This is VOA News. A Republican presidential candidate, Donald Trump, addressed a congregation at a predominantly African-American church in the Midwestern city of Detroit Saturday, telling voters there that the political system has failed the people. Trump says a civil rights agenda for our time is needed. He also says he hopes to help the city rebuild. Trump has stepped up his outreach to African-Americans, but has taken criticism for making the appeal before mostly white audiences recently. This is believed to be the first time his appeal has been made directly before African-American voters. So far, Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton's campaign has not reacted to Trump's visit to Detroit today. Speaking of Clinton, the FBI has released 58 pages of documents to the public from their investigation of U.S. presidential candidate Hillary Clinton's controversial use of a private email server during her time as Secretary of State. The Federal Bureau of Investigation closed its year-long probe last month into whether Clinton and her aides mishandled sensitive information that flowed through the private email server located in her home in New York. FBI Director James Comey said his agents found no evidence of criminal wrongdoing by the Democratic presidential nominee. Turkey has sent more tanks into southern Syria to support Syrian rebels fighting Islamic State. Turkish media says that tanks, armored personnel carriers, and trucks were crossing the border, marking Turkey's second incursion since it launched the so-called Euphrates Shield operation, along with Free Syrian Army units, back in August. Meanwhile, Turkey's president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, said Saturday that terrorism is a long-term issue for discussion by members of the group of 20 nations gathering in China for the 2016 summit. For details on these stories and much more news, you can join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
The economic crisis in the country is a direct consequence of the years of looting, massive looting. This is what is unfolding in the country. Years of PPP, years of locusts. They were stealing massively from the country.
A Nigerian presidential spokesman says the opposition call for Buhari's resignation is outrageous.
She says she had not seen her husband for 4 years and decided to return to Cameroon with their 8 children.
Hundreds of Cameroonians escaped Boko Haram atrocities and returned to their villages.
The Zimbabwean population seems to be looking forward to the demise of their president. I think this has something to do with the fact that his presidency has been characterized by reducing the quality of life of most Zimbabweans, and they think that their fortunes can change only if he goes, whether by natural means or any other means.
And Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe returns home amid rumors of his failing health. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The spokesman for Nigerian president says the main opposition People's Democratic Party's call for Muhammadu Buhari's resignation is outrageous. The PDP also says the government dependence on oil and failure to diversify the economy are to blame for the poor economic outlook. This after the National Bureau of Statistics officially confirmed that the country is in recession, adding that the gross domestic product contracted by 2.06%. But presidential spokesman Garba Shehu told me Buhari is not to blame for the economic crisis.
Well, that should not surprise anyone, because this is long expected. The economy had been racked over the years by massive corruption and lack of productivity. The collapse of the oil price came hard on the Nigerian economy, and the ongoing sabotage of oil installations by the militants in the Delta, which has cut oil output by nearly 60 or 50%. So all of these coming together obviously have their implications on the overall performance of the economy. What is the president's reaction? The president's reaction to the report is that there are positive signals coming also from the report, because the key elements of policy of the administration, meaning agriculture, mining, and the foreign investment, all of this showed an indication of growth, which indicates that the economy is responding to the policy direction and priorities of the President Muhammadu Buhari administration.
What do you say to critics who say that the economic policies appear not to be working, because they said if the president has expedited his measures to diversify the economy wouldn't have contracted, as the figures released by the National Bureau of Statistics put it?
Well, any effort to diversify the economy will have to take time. This country, for all its life, for as long as anyone can remember, had relied solely on earning from petrol, you know, for virtually everything, for our foreign earnings. Now, we have to pay a price for this. Oil, which had hit nearly $140, came down to the bottom of $28. This has to have implications for the country. And nobody saved for the rainy day. Nobody planned over these years to diversify. It is ironically the Muhammadu Buhari administration that is saying to the country, we have to move away from agriculture. And we're already setting targets. In 3 years, at the end of the first term of this administration, this country will not be importing rice. We will not be importing wheat and hopefully sugar. So there's a green revolution that is unfolding in this country. And agriculture will be the mainstay of the economy, with or without oil.
Let me ask you this question. After the PDP came up with a statement Wednesday saying that the crisis is a direct consequence of Mr. Buhari's ineptitude and incompetent approach to economic management, which were a rehash of the archaic and incoherent economic policies that he similarly pursued as the head of a military junta between 1983 and 1985. What is your reaction to this statement coming from the PDP?
The economic crisis in the country is a direct consequence of the years of looting, massive looting. Look, this is a country, it has never happened in any other country, that billions of U.S. dollars of earnings from crude oil or money borrowed from abroad. People will sit down on a table as if they will have dinner, and they will share this money among themselves. This is what is unfolding in the country. Years of PDP, years of locust, they were stealing massively from the country. And as we are looking at things now, in fact, the amount of money those people have stolen is a threat to the security of this country today. It's dangerous for the country, for individuals to have the kind of money that those people have. So massive recovery effort is going on, and they are returning money voluntarily. The courts are forcing them. The EFCC, they are recovering massive sums of money. So all of these are consequences of years of mismanagement. And the president is trying to bring the country out of the hole. Out of the hole. We had to stop the bleeding, block the seepage, the theft of crude oil and the money directly from the treasury. This country will never get out of the economic problem with corruption as a main policy of any government.
Garba Shehu is the Nigerian presidential spokesman. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. Hundreds of Cameroonians living in northern Nigeria, near territory controlled by Boko Haram, are escaping atrocities and returning to their villages with the hope of finding peace. Rights groups, however, say the returnees are rejected by their communities and face several forms of violence. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka met returnees arriving at the border village of Zama.
100 returnees have just arrived at the northern Cameroon border village of Zamai as they flee the terror of Boko Haram militants in Nigeria. 40-year-old Zainabu Abu says she escaped from the Sambisa forest, stronghold of Boko Haram that straddles the border between Cameroon and Nigeria, and walked for 3 weeks before arriving in Zamai. She says she had not seen her husband for 4 years and decided to return to Cameroon with their 8 children. Abu says she was told by friends that her parents left Zamai 36 years ago when she was a kid and settled in Sambisa as cattle ranchers. The government of Cameroon and the United Nations have built a resettlement camp for returnees and internally displaced persons in Zamai, where Huli Bernadette was attending to a pregnant and sick returnee when VOA visited. Bernadette says the girl was married to a Boko Haram member.
Elle a été envoyée en mariage à l'âge de 14 ans. C'était en plein année scolaire.
She says the 15-year-old was asked to stop school and forced to get married to a Boko Haram agent when she was 14. She says the girl's husband is wanted by law enforcement authorities for selling stolen cattle and handing the money to Boko Haram fighters. Attacks by Boko Haram against Nigeria began inside Cameroon, Chad and Niger 3 years ago. Boko Haram destroyed many villages and killed residents, especially men who refused to join them. The United Nations estimates 25,000 have been killed and more than 2.5 million have been displaced. Sali Bobo a rights leader working with the association in Cameroon that fights violence against women, says the returnees coming to Cameroon border villages where Boko Haram atrocities continue are traumatized, yet they do not find peace.
C'est des personnes profondément traumatisées.
He says they are deeply traumatized because one day they saw foreigners arrive in their villages and slaughter their husbands and male children. He says memories of the horror keep coming to their minds, especially when they see people they have never seen before. He says they are scared and find it very difficult to communicate. Bobo says that besides the violence they are subjected to by host communities and the struggle for limited resources, returnee women and girls suffer sexual harassment and rape, and many are poor or homeless. Ibrahim Hamao, the traditional ruler of Zamai, adds that conflicts over food and water erupt regularly between the returnees and their host communities.
La plupart ce sont des femmes et des enfants. On leur a demandé de suivre ce que.
He says they have told the returnees, who are mainly women and children, to obey the people of Zamai village who have agreed to host them. He says within the past 2 months, hundreds of returnees who have been received in his village are complaining of hunger and thirst, and the villagers are not happy because they themselves have not had enough to eat and drink. Most people coming back are in hardship, and their main requests are for food, health, sanitation, safety, and lodging. In February, the United Nations called on the governments of Cameroon and Nigeria to ensure that the areas they claim to have liberated from Boko Haram forces are truly safe for people returning home. Moki, Edwin Kinzuka, for VOA News, Zamai, Northern Cameroon.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, a political dialogue that started Thursday has been suspended over the weekend in the hope that more of the opposition will attend. But the main opposition bloc known as the Rassemblement has set preconditions for attending. For VOA, Nick Long reports from Eastern DRC.
The Rassemblement's preconditions for participating in the dialogue include freeing political prisoners, lifting bans on several TV stations, and the resignation of the dialogue's current facilitator, Edem Kodjo, a former chairman of the Organization of African Unity. Tensions have been on the rise in the Democratic Republic of Congo amid controversy over a court ruling that would allow President Joseph Kabila to stay in power beyond the 2 consecutive terms currently permitted by the Constitution. Key issues in the political turmoil have been a timetable for holding free and fair national elections and what should be done if a solution is not reached by the end of Kabila's mandate in December. Government authorities have said the elections, scheduled for November, must be delayed until next year to allow time to register millions of new voters. Kabila's opponents accuse him of stalling the poll to hold on to power, a charge the president denies. The United States and the European Union have encouraged Congo's politicians to take part in a dialogue so as to reach an agreement on holding elections. So far, few opposition parties have agreed to take part. Leading the opposition group in the dialogue is Vital Kamerhe, a former president of the National Assembly. Speaking at the opening session Thursday, he insisted the group would not accept a third term for President Joseph Kabila.
C'est que tout le monde est conscient que nous sommes en train d'entrer dans la crise, sinon déjà en pleine crise.
Everyone knows, he says, that the country is about to enter a crisis if it's not already in one. That's why we must have these talks, he adds, so that when they are over, we can tell the Congolese people clearly when the presidential election will be held and when power will be transferred. He noted the government has gone some way to meeting opposition demands. He says some prisoners of war and political prisoners have been released, and 2 TV stations have been reopened in Kinshasa, but 5 remain closed in Katanga province. He calls on the government to go all the way with freeing prisoners and reopening media. 8 pro-democracy activists, most of whom had been in jail since early last year, were freed this week. Human Rights Watch researcher Ida Sawyer said this was a positive step, but others remain to be freed.
Human Rights Watch has documented at least 20 other political prisoners who remain in detention. These people were arrested after speaking out against attempts to extend President Kabila's stay in power beyond the end of his mandate, or after participating in peaceful political activities.
Several of these prisoners are leaders of opposition parties, and most have been held for long periods. Another 170 prisoners were also released from two of the country's jails this week, but Sawyer said it's not known how many of them might have been held for political offences. Meanwhile, 85 opposition demonstrators were arrested in Kinshasa on Thursday. The US government, in its latest statement on the DRC dialogue, welcomed the release of the pro-democracy activists this week, but said others also need to be freed and some lawsuits against opposition leaders dropped. The dialogue facilitator agreed to Vital Kamerhe's suggestion that the talks should be suspended over the weekend while he tries to persuade the Rassemblement to take part. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe has returned home amid rumors his health is failing. Mr. Mugabe's plane touched down at the main airport in the capital, Harare, on Saturday. Reports say Mugabe, Africa's oldest leader, went to Dubai to seek medical attention. Zimbabweans are growing increasingly frustrated with Mugabe and his family and failure to fix the economy. He's dealing with a wave of opposition to his 36-year rule in the form of public protests. To learn more, I reached George Nkwenanzi, a Zimbabwean political analyst.
This might sound quite inhumane and uncharacteristic of human beings, but the reality is that most Zimbabweans seem to be quite excited at the rumor. So the Zimbabwean population seems to be looking forward to the demise of their president. I think this has something to do with the fact that his presidency has been characterized by the reduction in the quality of life of most Zimbabweans. And they think that their fortunes can change only if he goes, whether by natural means or any other means.
Some Zimbabweans are frustrated with the economy because the government has not been able to pay public sector workers, including some security agencies. I heard his supporters from the East are not supplying any funds to prep him up. What is the current economic situation in the country?
Yeah, what has happened so far, as you are accurately describing, is that most economic activities have come to a standstill, particularly those that are linked to the financial sector, the banks and so on, because the banks are no longer functioning properly. The cash that they are supposed to be giving out to the people seems to have been cut drastically. People's money seems to be captured in the banks, yet they need the money to buy things and goods and services. Also related to that is obviously the question of the credit lines that Zimbabwe would like to be reopened with international finance bodies like the IMF and the World Bank, which have been a struggle for the government to get them to be reactivated. So that has affected, in the broad sense, the productivity of the country in terms of its gross domestic product and so on. The last time I heard was that they were operating at below 20% capacity, which probably explains why there is no cash that is circulating within the country, because the economy is not producing anything. So that has affected many people in many ways, including the job losses, including the fact that certain services cannot be given by institutions like hospitals, medicines have run out and so on. So it's really a very catastrophic situation in Zimbabwe. It's no wonder that Mugabe himself and his family, when they need the medical attention, they have to fly out of the country because the bills are not being paid to all service providers to the government.
Politically, I understand President Mugabe is under pressure, even from within his own ZANU-PF party, coupled with the latest round of protests and demonstrations across the country. Do you think he is capable of weathering the storm now, or as he has done over the years, he is capable of riding this out?
I agree with you that over the years, he has been able to weather the storm. But I think this time, things are different. There are so many things that have structurally altered, you know, not to his favor, but to his disadvantage. It was easier for him and his party to stand the pressure that was coming externally from opposition and any other people, any other bodies. But this time around, the party seems to be facing a real danger of a serious demise. The departure of the former Vice President Joyce Ijo left a very big gulf within the party up to now that cascades down to the military. So you have a party that is not united, not even within those structures that had kept it intact together, especially the securocrats. So if you see even soldiers, you know, joining the strike, police joining the strike, don't think that they've just thought that out of their own volition. They have senior people advising them to do so. So that is indicative of a situation where he has lost even control of that vital organ called the military in Zimbabwe, which had been always the source of his livelihood to survive and weather all the storms that have been coming from anywhere. So this time around, it is likely that he will be, you know, swept off his feet by the tsunami that is coming his way.
George Nkwenanzi is a Zimbabwean political analyst. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. The World Health Organization Emergency Committee reports the threat of the Zika virus and its link with microcephaly or brain abnormalities in newborn babies and other neurological disorders remains high. The committee says Zika infections constitute a public health emergency of international concern. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The committee warns the Zika virus is continuing to spread geographically. New outbreaks continue to be identified, most recently in Guinea-Bissau and Singapore. It says nations must remain vigilant and take measures to contain the disease. Since the World Health Organization declared Zika a global health emergency on February 1st, the committee says it has learned a lot about the virus and its impact. Additionally, the committee says it has taught people how to control the virus and protect themselves from mosquito bites. WHO Executive Director of Outbreaks and Health Emergencies, Peter Salama, says health workers were trained on how to deal with the consequences of infection, helping women manage their pregnancies, and dealing with a newborn baby with a brain disorder.
Working with the scientific community, we've learned that Zika has consequences in infants beyond microcephaly to a range of complications, from hearing and eyesight complications to seizures, and we now have called this the Zika congenital syndrome. Many entities, both public and private, are working on the development of diagnostic tests and vaccines.
Three governments, Brazil, the United States, and Singapore, provided information on microcephaly, Guillain-Barré syndrome, and other neurological disorders. Brazil reported that none of the athletes or people who attended the Olympics was infected with Zika and said the upcoming Paralympics also would be safe. The World Health Organization reaffirmed its previous advice that there should not be any restrictions on travel or trade with countries where Zika is being transmitted. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We'll be right back. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today. Matapishi ni kinya, uzirudisha tena kwenye kinywa. Japo mengi ulisema, kama nuru ghafla ukazima. Ikawa ngumu kukusahau, nikasema moyo ukome. Kwa kali sumu na madharau, penzi ulivunja na ngome. Najua hata nikilia, siwezi kutokwa na machozi. Wewe ulifanya macho yangu nione wengi wao, au kauzuru moyo wangu. Uliuza penzi kwa maneno, na natamani wewe kurudia zamani.
Shuka tuliolalia, mapenzi yana siri kubwa, sishangai mtu akilia. Nakubali mboni zangu zimtazame mwingine, maridhia ya moyo wangu huenda sifungu pengine. Cha kushangaza hadharani mengi, ya kuficha ukaweka wazi. Nikaisi sijui mapenzi, labda kwako sino ginazi. Na unajua hata nikilia, siwezi kutokwa na machozi. Wewe ulifanya macho yangu nione wengi waongo, au kauzuru moyo wangu. Uliuza penzi kwa maneno, natamani wewe kurudia zamani. Tambua mapenzi mabaya, kidona chake akina gadawa. E mazoea, lakini mini shazoea. Mwana, tambua mapenzi mabaya, kidona chake akina gadawa.
I love you, baby. 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 I love you, baby.
ni tukiongo sana we. Haya, mapacha tusio fanana mimi na we. Haya, kumbe we ndo pacha wangu. Mizi wa baby, utuna visa vyangu, vyote na kukabidi. Even me mama, unanoniza, usiku kipiga simu.
Baby, I'm not a perfect thing, but I'm going my own way, and I just want to
house on the beat, everybody bow we go. The house on the beat, everybody bow we go. From the north and south, to the east and west. Hey! Home and south, them know my hand. Africa, my motherland, with no comparison,
the greatest land.
A land of milk and honey.
Oh, oh.
A story long foretold.
God will never allow it to happen.
To happen, happen. Not again, not again.
Sister, kill sister.
Not again, not again. Enemy, Maka Uwae. Say, voice na bambo. Go!
Can I get your number so I can tell you later? It's all on me, it's all I need. You give me brain touch, you the statue with my brain. You the blade for my head, you really need my mind. I know you do, Yanga, but I didn't love it anyway. Yanga, oh, Yanga, it's in a bad way. I keep it pretty all day. Cool every day on a Sunday. And if you want play, make me holiday. I pull the ring, baby, get it, look, take it, take it. You got a booty for this. You got a body and a booty for this. And my head, they put it for this. Like I run the team for Broadway. Hey, baby, hello, baby. What's your name? Ah, and I really go.
I
Music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Douglas Impuga, and our engineer for today, Nelson Lopez, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, anyone who urinates in a stream should be warned because any of his relatives may drink from the same water. I'm your host, Peter Clotet in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A quarter century of civil war, exacerbated by the rise of the violent Al-Shabaab terror group and cyclical droughts of historic proportions, has seen wave after wave of Somalis leaving their home country. Today, some 463,000 Somalis are living as refugees in camps in neighboring Kenya. In many respects, the conditions in Somalia have been steadily improving. The government and economy are taking shape. Somali security forces are emerging, and Al-Shabaab has steadily lost territory due to the combined actions of the Somali government, international partners, and the African Union Mission in Somalia, or AMISOM forces. And thanks to the tripartite agreement of 2014, refugees have been making their way home from Kenya. However, the country, its people living in Somalia and abroad, as well as repatriating refugees, are still in dire need of humanitarian help. So the United States is stepping up, said Secretary of State John Kerry during his recent visit to Kenya. I am pleased to announce that the United States will be providing an additional $117 million more in support for refugees, returnees, and drought victims in the region, raising our total assistance just for this year to $265 million. And we will also contribute an additional $29 million to the UNHCR's new supplementary appeal in support of the safe and voluntary return of refugees to Somalia. This sum includes new humanitarian assistance of more than $87 million in food and non-food help for refugees and drought victims in Kenya and Somalia. Working through a number of humanitarian organizations, the United States will also provide aid and help improve conditions across Somalia, particularly in hard-to-reach areas of south-central Somalia. This aid includes support shelter, water sanitation, and hygiene, health, and nutrition, and livelihoods programs for returnees in accessible areas of return. The United States remains committed to helping address the serious humanitarian concerns in Somalia and continued protection and assistance for refugees in Kenya and elsewhere in the region, and continues to urge the international community to contribute more resources to humanitarian appeals to support durable solutions for Somali refugees.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.